Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to InnovaBiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
Give without thought of receipt, knowing that some way something good's going to happen. That's the way you need to do your jabs. You need to do your gives knowing that you might give, and someone over here might take, and the right hook might be from somewhere completely unrelated. It just needs to be giving without the pressure on you and without you putting the pressure on the world out there to reciprocate and give back.
Hi there, innovator. It's that time of week again, and it's really great to be back with you and with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. And I hope you enjoyed the recent conversations that I had with Tony DiMeo of Big Media USA and with Patty Dominguez, who's a business growth strategist. I'm really excited today to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Glenn Twiddle, whose history includes being a real estate agent, a sales manager, a sales trainer, a real estate principal and business owner, and a clinical hypnotherapist. Now, he's also run large events where he's had people like Sir Richard Branson, Gary Vaynerchuk, and also Arnold Schwarzenegger as keynote speakers. So he's well connected. He started as a salesperson and quickly became the number one salesperson in the competitive inner city Brisbane apartment market. He's trained and mentored thousands of real estate agents and now teaches real estate agents a step-by-step fill-in-the-blank system for becoming the number one real estate agent in their area in 3 years or less, no matter where they are right now. In our discussion, Glenn talked to me about how to use Facebook ads to learn about our target audience and focus our marketing on them. We talked a lot about giving value without any expectation. And Glenn explained creative ways to build relationships before selling. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Glenn Twiddle. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Brisbane in Australia, Glenn Twiddle, who's the CEO of Total Success Summit and also Australia's number one real estate business coach. So welcome to the podcast, Glenn. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
No, the honour's mine, mate, from someone from my hometown. I'm now in Brisbane, but I grew up in Ipswich and out a few suburbs west. But it is good to get on, share some ideas and some insights and things. And whenever I hear those bios, I sometimes think, geez, are they talking about me? God, because in my head, I'm still the idiot from Bundamba High out of Ipswich.
All right. Okay. Well, I think you've come a long way from there, because Matt Johnson, who was our guest on episode 266, he suggested that we have a conversation with you on the InnovaBuzz podcast. So big shout out to Matt.
He's a fantastic man. Yeah, he's great. We brought Matt in and his business partner from the States because I'm such a big fan of theirs. Matt's so smart, and Greg McDaniel, his partner, is just such a great innovator and executor of the principles that Matt espouses. And I was honored to get a shout out in Matt's book, Microphones. Yeah, yeah. That was pretty cool. That was pretty cool.
When we had him on the podcast, the book hadn't been published yet. I've just got a copy, started reading it, and it is really excellent.
Knows his stuff, so, man. And those principles that, you know, I'd say to your audience, check that book out, Microphones, Matt Johnson, because even though I didn't know Matt when I was executing this, Matt and I, of course, have shared similar mentors and a similar journey, because it's almost like every principle that he talks about in that, by either chance or by learning through a similar mentor, that's my journey. That's exactly my journey. Became a big fish in a small pond, a micro famous. So to that particular marketplace that I serve, I'm, you know, universally 100% brand recognition. I'm well known. I'm virtually a celebrity. You know, maybe not as crazy as that might sound or arrogant as that sound, but I'm, you know, omnipotently known, without, you know, ubiquitous, whatever the word is. Whereas if I go down to my local shops here, no one stops me for an autograph, because only to my tribe, my market, my, you know, which is primarily real estate agents, I'm only famous to them. But to everyone else, just a bloke, you know. So it's good. Best of both worlds.
Yeah, that's great advice. And, you know, we'll explore that some more. So you host the Real Estate Renegades podcast as well. So you're a podcaster, and your primarily function is teaching real estate agents a step-by-step, fill-in-the-blank system for becoming the number one estate agent in their area. So as you said, you've applied the principles of MicroFamous and become the go-to person for that service in the real estate industry. Now, I noticed from your background, you've had a wide variety of things on your resume, right through to hypnotherapy as well. So tell us a little bit about how you got into real estate and then coaching real estate businesses.
Yeah, well, actually the hypnosis thing came after real estate, meaning I was in real estate and I hated cold calls. I despised it, right? It nearly killed me. In fact, I lasted listing and selling real estate for like 6 years, using the only method of attracting new business was to just churn out cold calls. And it was so painful that I would have left the industry. I couldn't do it. But it was during that time that I stumbled across two modalities of personal development, if you will. One was called NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming, which has in its history, in its ties, hypnosis. It's based on hypnotic principles. And a lot of the teachings that they teach in neuro-linguistic programming hark back to a fellow called Milton Erickson, who was the world's foremost hypnotist at that time. And I went to that modality to learn how to influence better, persuade better, so just be a better salesperson all around. And at the same time, while I was learning that modality, that did lead to clinical hypnotherapy, because I thought, if I'm going to learn this, I want to learn it not surface level, but I want to learn it deeply. So I continued my study all the way through to being a clinician, and I practiced for a period of time in that space. And at the same time, I was learning marketing. So the two modalities that I was learning was, one, marketing of how to get a client to call me, because I could not stand having to cold call them. It was killing me. And then once I've got someone to call me, skillful linguistics, say based on the hypnosis training, the NLP training, and all of those scripts, dialogues, best practice language, and all of that stuff, so that when I do get in front of a consumer, I can, you know, convert business and help them and do it in a natural way where I don't sound all salesy and scripty and stuff. I could be a normal person and do well. So without the painful cold calling, because that's what I was taught, cold call, and then say this script, you know, as many times as you can to those cold call people, and you're going to be okay. And it works. It's just that it killed my soul. I just couldn't do it forever.
One of the wonderful things, and, you know, I've done a lot of work with NLP, one of the wonderful things for me in the whole NLP is building that connection with the client. And like you said, you mentioned serving, how can I serve them best, or how can I solve their problems best, which is, you know, if you get to their level of language and build that connection, that's what you get. Whereas the cold call is a lot like, particularly if it's a scripted cold call, is it's a lot like, you know, I don't know what you do in the real estate property, but I get a lot from energy companies or telcos, and they say, you know, you know, how many mobile phones do you have? That's what they start with, something like that. And you say, well, who are you, and why are you calling me? You know, there's sort of nothing at a human level there.
Absolutely. And that's certainly what I teach real estate agents, is that many of them, because I met them, you know, my next step after kind of owning an agency when I got a buyout is I went to the Real Estate Institute. I trained at the Institute. So I saw all of them slash us, because I was one. Mm. I saw them on the way in when they're getting their license, and they weren't like you're describing. The industry turns them into that. I met them when they were humans, when a lot of them got into real estate because they were treated badly as a consumer. And they said to themselves, well, geez, if he can drive a BMW like that and be that much of an idiot, then I'm in. And yet the industry is so set in its ways and almost so insular that, you know, you get out of the real estate school with your license, you look at what everyone else is doing, you think, well, if that's the way things are done around here, and they end up modeling some of the worst practices. And so that's why I'm seen by the industry as a little bit of an innovator, an out-of-the-box thinker, a thought leader. I was the finalist for this thought leader of the year for the entire industry. And that, to me, brings up all these connotations of unique innovation and you've original thought. None of my stuff is original thought. It's just that it's not copied off the same stuff that they're all copying off each other, you know? So, it's been a real treat to introduce some of those, hey, meet someone where they are. You know, one of the cold call implementations that we're doing right now is just simply, as best as we can, with as much humanity and as little salesperson ickiness as possible, because that's the big barrier to their success, is the minute that person comes up to you at the shopping center and says anything to you, if it smells like a, hey, who's your power provider? Or, hey, who's, you know, how many mobile phones have you got? Instantly the barriers are up, and you want to do anything.
That's right, yeah.
You don't even want to talk to them to find out what there are, because you know what's coming. You want to go around them to get to Coles. You don't even want to go past them, you know?
Mm.
And so we need to, I'll give you a great example of maybe what to do instead. Okay, so we've beat them up and said, okay, you hate us. Well, now what do we do? Okay, so here maybe is an alternative. One of my guys got some gifted, you know, those pop-up shops you get out front of Coles, where often they are populated by the energy companies and by the mobile phone providers. So he got that gifted with his lease, and he's got a quarterly 2-day window for free once a quarter, every quarter with no cost. So all he's got to do is man it with either him or a staff member, and it's free. So free leads. Now in that space, the main thing they want is to get into a home to appraise that home, right? Not because they want to sell it, but they just want to meet the person, have the person think of them as a nice enough man or woman. If ever in the needs in the future, and there's a big principle there, that if they need a real estate agent 3 years from now, we want to meet them now so that we can start building some sort of connection, follow them up through follow-up, sometimes personal contact, oftentimes through electronic communication or some sort of multimedia, multi-step follow-up system, maybe the odd personal SMS, but it's still, its language is personal, but its execution is done by technology, by a CRM, you know? So it still feels human-like, but it's not delivered by a human because we've got too many people in our database for one-on-one communication to 10,000 people, for example. So our ideal outcome is to meet them now, build a little bit of a connection so heaven forbid they know who we are, so that when they're ready and they need the service that we provide, we'll be first, top of mind, et cetera. So if that's our outcome, the best way to do that isn't, hey, do you want to sell? You know, Jürgen, you know, where are you at the moment? You want to sell? Come on. No, you want to meet them years ago so that when you do want to sell, you say, hey, Glenn, mate, we're finally ready, bud. Thanks for staying in touch for so long. When can you pop round? That's right.
Yeah.
So the way we did that with his free pop-up space is, now understand that a real estate agent has in their marketing budget a good $10, $15, $20, even $30 per appraisal that they would be willing to invest in Facebook advertising, in flyer drops, in whatever marketing media that one might want to invest. They'll be willing to pay $20 to $30 for one of those appraisals, knowing that a certain percentage of them will be a listing and knowing that a certain percentage of those listings will be a commission check. And those commission checks are quite high, you can imagine. So they're willing to pay a certain amount. So the thinking was this. I had a big pull-up banner made with the salesperson holding a six-pack of Corona in one hand a six pack. Actually, it wasn't Corona. Corona's on my mind because of recent shenanigans. It was a six pack of Crown. Yeah, six pack Corona's Crown Lager.
Taking a hit at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. So six pack of Crownies in one hand, on the pull up banner, a bottle of nice red wine in the other hand, with him friendly saying, "Beer or wine, my shout." So then the pitch to the person is, he's sitting there with a beer and a wine, right? A six-pack of beer and wine. Now, you're not legally allowed to, I don't believe, I'm assuming, you can't just give out booze on the street. So what he does is, he says, "Oh, g'day, Jürgen." He won't know you by name. "Sir, I need to know, I'm doing a little bit of a survey here. Are you a beer or a wine guy? What's your poison?" Now, you might, and no obligation, I ain't selling it for you. In fact, you see the sign there? It's free. "My shout. Which do you want?" Right? That's going to get your attention more than, "Hey, how's your power bill?" Now, I've heard some of those power transfer companies is a multi-$1,000 sale. Like, it is really valuable. So say 1 in 5 people signed up to a power bill. This is where mathematics comes into it. And you had to say, "Hey, what's your poison? Beer, wine, or spirit? Yeah, what's your poison?" And 1 in 5 people said, took you up on the offer, but you had to give away 5 bottles of wine at $20 in order to, so you're in for $100 for your $1,000 commission check. You know what I mean? Mm. And I tell you, the early indications are everyone's keen on the beer or wine. And now, of course, going back to the real estate example, how does that get into real estate? Well, remember our outcome. It's just to deliver a property price report and have them think you're cool. So then you're saying, "All right, so Jürgen, you're a wine guy, right? I've got you down for that." As you can imagine, with licensing, I'm not allowed to just hand it to you here. I'm not allowed to do that because I'm not a pub. But I'll just grab your address. I'll drop it round. I'll hand deliver it to you. As part of this deal, what we are also offering is a little property price report, you know, and that's just part of what I do. So I've waived the cost on that. This sort of data is normally $400 or $500 if you paid a valuer for this sort of data. It would be $400 or $500. So, but I've waived all the costs on this and it's completely free. I'll deliver it with your wine. When's a good time to drop it off? How much better is that than, and it's the same cost as advertising on Facebook or doing a flyer drop and all of that. And yet everyone says yes to that and no one hates you. So
it's basically starting a relationship first with, your wine and beer as the hook, then giving some value. And I guess the other part of that, because you talked about ongoing communication. So in that ongoing communications, it's continuing to deliver some value, because that's when if I keep getting stuff from you over a period of 5 years, say, and in 5 years' time, for some reason, I want to sell my property, that's when I think, well, hey, I've got all this stuff that's really helped me. Maybe it's helped me improve the property and improve the value of the property over that 5-year period. Well, then I'm almost obligated to come to you because you've helped me actually transform something beforehand without anything, expecting anything in return. So I think that's a really fantastic marketing principle that applies across the board.
Yeah, it does. And I would even add to that, because I agree with you that you could be, because some agents do play the add value in the space with which I'm wanting to eventually do business with you, like in the property industry. But what we've found is you don't even have to add that much value in that space. So long as they know what it is that you do professionally, that obligation will be there no matter how you're adding value to their world. Even if you're just entertaining and funny, and heaven forbid, you might be the only one that they know is alive. Because so many areas, these real estate agents and many businesses, they think they're providing their marketplace with an overwhelming abundance of information and market awareness that they exist. Well, try asking their clients and you'll see that recognition is so far less than what the business thinks it is or should be, that it drops the jaw of some business owners.
Yeah. Well, I know in our little town, I mean, it's this little small township here, and I go for a walk occasionally, and every now and then I think, oh, there's a new real estate agent there. So basically what they've done is set up an office. They've put all the properties that they've got for sale or for lease in their display window, and that's all. And so they're totally relying on somebody walking past there that happens to be in the market for either buying or leasing, and then for that person to go inside there, because there's other real estate agents in the town as well. So, you know, there's no guarantee when you walk past that you'll actually go in there.
Well, yeah, when was the last time you were down at Carina or Carindale down that way?
Where's that?
Carina. Oh, it's on the eastern suburbs of Brisbane. There's a strip of shops there.
Okay. Right? Yeah. No, I haven't been there.
There's like a real estate agency, then an IGA, then a hairdresser, then a real estate agency, then a butcher, then a real estate agency. There's like eight real estate agencies in one little strip of shops, each of which would house between 5 and 10 potentially real estate agents. What hope has that one little one in the middle there got if they don't learn some of these databasing, marketing, attention-getting principles that we're talking about? What hope have they got? And that's the reason that the fallout rate in that particular industry is 9 out of 10 of them are gone within 2 years of getting their license. 90% fallout. It's because they're trying to be 1 out of 100 getting chosen when there might only be 100 sales in any given quarter. And, you know, that's why many of them earn $40,000 a year or less, because it ain't that easy to split up that pie so many ways. And yet that's why when you get these things right, the other end of the spectrum, that disproportionate top 5% earns 95% of the money. They do seven figures in income because they get some of these principles that we've been talking about right in that industry. But, you know, your audience is so varied, Jürgen, then you mentioned it before. That can work. That incentive to meet the wine can work in so many industries. Like, have you ever see the American Express deliver a beautiful big Ferrari, remote control Ferrari? You ever seen that particular one where they deliver the Ferrari? So they deliver this beautiful remote control Ferrari with a sales letter on it, right? It's magnificent, and it's a gift. It's like, bloody hell, this is bloody good. Guess what the catch is? You got to meet with their rep to get the remote. Genius. So think about a sales letter that, you know, think about your junk mail. Oh, you're not visual. I know I'm seeing you on the thing, but the podcast is.
Yeah.
I've got a thing of junk mail right there. Big chockers full thing of junk mail, right? Think about all that junk mail. How many of them actually, heaven forbid, even get read? It's none, right? It's none. Now, I know for the purposes of your audience, they can't see it, but you can. I'm the only one in our area that saw this junk.
That's a sort of fairly sizable waste paper basket there, chock full of
and all of it, 0% readership, zero, right? 1% me, right? I'm the only one. And yet how many of those American Express big packages, remote control Ferraris, what's the percentage readership of that sales letter?
Yeah, well, that would be 100%, wouldn't it?
Damn straight.
These people say, what the hell is this about? Yeah, and then okay, how does this work? There must be some instructions here.
So they've worked out their mathematics. They read the letter. They get the catch. They go, oh, okay, I get it. 1 in 5 of them say takes them up on the offer. That means American Express might be in for, they'd probably buy those Ferraris for $50, maybe $30. So they might be face-to-face with a consumer. Now, they're very diligent in their selection. They only go to the right demographics of people who can afford the black card and all of those high-level cards. They know their mathematics. They know that it costs them $100 in Ferrari strategy generation to make a $1,000 sale or whatever the metrics would be. They're not just doing that willy-nilly. They know their maths. They know their psychology, meaning they know the psychology of the consumer, how to get their attention. And then they go and deliver their system. And that's the difference, I suppose, between many businesses who sort of spend all their money fitting out the shop window that you mentioned before, or the restaurant buys the Bain Maries and buys the chairs and paints up the window and all of that, then says, righto, now how do we fill it up and tell the world we're open, you know? And so it's the difference between that sort of hope strategy and really working out the mathematics of our business, working out the numbers, working out the psychology so that we can improve our numbers, and then executing it en masse. And I know so many people that have gotten that. I even know one bloke who got the Ferrari, called the guy in, knew it was a strategy, and still bought the Amex from the guy. Knew that it was a pitch, and he bought it because he was a well-qualified prospect. It was a good offer they made, you know? So interesting stuff.
Yeah, well, it comes back it raises with me the thought around, I mean, this is a kind of a bit of a passion of mine, is starting off being really clear about who your audience is, who your ideal client is. And so in that particular example, obviously, you're not going to send Ferraris around to all the people that are possibly going to buy or subscribe to a standard run-of-the-mill Amex card. It's the premium ones, the VIP people. So they know exactly who they are, and they've probably narrowed it down a lot further than that. Who are the people that right now are in the market for a credit card? And that's not all that difficult to do. But then maybe even who are the people that have an interest in cars? And if they get those three things together and get them right, then, you know, I mean, it's a fabulous conversation starter. And coming back to what you were saying earlier, it establishes that human relationship right up front, you know, before they've talked about credit cards.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and in today's world, there are so many variables. See, back in when I first started learning marketing, what we had to do was rent mailing lists or buy databases from mailing houses. And every time we'd do a test, would cost us $1,000 or so because we'd have to send out 1,000 letters with a stamp. Well, you know, the printing and the stamp, and we're up for $1. So you want to send out 1,000 to test a new sales letter or a new offer, you're up for $1,000 every time. The beauty of today's marketplace is they used to call it merge and purge back in the day. So they'd get your big database and they'd merge and purge and they'd apply whatever metrics they need with income and all of that stuff. Facebook now has all of that functionality. And social media, many of the social media platforms, my personal favorite's Facebook, where you can say, give me people that are interested in Tony Robbins, that are interested in BMWs, that are interested in Gary Vaynerchuk, and that are living in the northern suburbs of Brisbane. Go. Mm. And it'll give you an audience of 6,000 people, charge you 1 to 4 cents per impression for you to put your video or graphic in front of that human. And based on those metrics, boy, oh boy, you can really get laser beam focused on your ideal client. And then, moving forward from that, you can afford to spend so much money on impressions that anyone who doesn't, so long as you're break even, that's what I'm always after. If I'm at break even or better on the promotion, then everyone who saw my offer and my brand, they got an impression of my face and my name, which is my personal brand. That's what I'm always, the micro famous principle. I'm always going for my face and my name to be seen by my ideal market. So if I can break even, then all of that branding was self-liquidated. It was paid for. So that's where I start. Yeah. If I'm at break even or better, happy Glenn. When I make profit, wonderful. Break even, happy. Lose money, not as happy. I want to fix the maths or fix the psychology or fix whatever it is to bring it up to that break even or better. And once you've got that sort of thinking in mind, you can afford to spend a disproportionate amount of money because you know that it's going to do one of two things. It's going to make you a profit now, or it's going to make you branding, which is future bank money in the future. And Facebook's so powerful at allowing us to only go to people geographically in our area, because some businesses are just, we're a local IGA store. Well, you'd pick where your IGA store is and you know where your radius is and you just go to them in the age bracket of, it's the most powerful advertising mechanism we've ever seen in the modern, in both of our lifetimes. And and yet most businesses are vastly underskilled and vastly underinvested in that advertising platform, in my opinion.
Yeah. And it's a really good point. And they certainly do make it easy to kind of get that laser targeting right. And they've even got, like, you can get like audiences where you can go in and see what's actually resonating and look at advertisements that are actually running and that are successful and say, well, actually that's pitching to my audience as well. And you can sort of construct a like audience from that.
Yeah. Well, and the next one is, so here's a strategy. Here's a really practical strategy for you guys, Jürgen. So you run a video that you think is at your ideal market. You just go close, right? Because sometimes it's not as easy as interested in BMWs or whatever. So get as close as you can. Put $200 on that. That's going to get you in front of 10,000 odd people, let's say. Ballpark, just average. It's going to probably get you in front of 10,000 views. And then you do that once or twice. And so you run the video of whatever content that might be. So say, one of your guys is in, you know, some sort of vehicular manufacturing or something, right? And their particular target market is the after sales BMW market. I don't know, something like that, right?
Hmm.
So we go to a market geographically where we talk, where the video says, "G'day folks, Glenn Twiddle here. Today we're going to be talking about this BMW shortage that happens to be because of the, you know, the blah, 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 blah." So do a talk, a video for free on your area of expertise that sort of only would be of interest to the person who your would suit your product or service. So again, for you, Jürgen, it might be the small to medium business owner, it might be the large corporate business owner, it might be the, you know, the purchasing manager in a big corporate or something. But you start your video, once you've targeted that, saying, now, if you're in the kind of the purchasing with responsibility for staff, for purchasing, for safety, here in this coronavirus-fueled environment that we happen to be in, listen up, because I've really got something to share with you that I know you're going to find valuable. And then you rant for 5 minutes about adding something valuable to your ideal client. Well, then after you do that for two or three videos, you say to Facebook in the audiences section, give me the people that watched 50% or more of those videos and only show them the next ad, right? So you're extracting from the greater 10,000 only the 400 that watched half the video or 75% of the video or whatever the case may be. So that's strategy one. You have that audience now. That's beautiful. But 400 or 750, that's not that big an audience. So here's where the thing you mentioned is brutally, scarily good. The reason Facebook is a free product and yet it's so universally used, right? Everyone's got an account. When my dad got a Facebook account, I just said to myself, well, it's all over. That's the whole world. My dad was the last one because he said, I'll never do it. And the minute he did it, that's it. We've all got one now. My dad was the last one. So given that, why the hell is it free and why haven't they monetized? And it's because the fact that we're free, we're the product that they're selling to the advertisers. And here's what they do. What they do is they take that 400 or 700 who watched 50% of your video. So that's probably your ideal market there in that audience of 400.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you can say to Facebook, hey, Facebook, what I would love is I would like you to get a gene DNA sample from my 400 people and just clone them 150,000 times, please. Just give me out of the 100 percentile of Australian population, just give me the top 1% that is most identical to my ideal audience of 400 people. And then put my ads in front of that, what they call lookalike audience. So it's like you can take your database or you can take your video watchers or any audience that you create that is a representation of your ideal client. And then you say to Facebook, clone that for me. And through artificial intelligence, through knowing everything about you, because what do we do when we're tagging, our friends, when we're saying what we're buying, when we're checking in at various places? It knows everything. And given that it knows everything about us, it knows when to put us into a lookalike audience of someone else and shove ads in front of you. It's amazing as an ad platform, scary as an ad platform as a user. It scares me to know that this is what they are doing with our behavioral data online. But when I'm on the other side of that coin, when I'm the advertiser, it is the second coming. It's the biggest innovation since the printing press. So therein lies, you know, some of the marketing of today, let alone the marketing of the future, when these devices like Siri and Google Home and Alexa are listening into conversations that we're having about X. And then shoving products up that suit our conversations that we're having. That's the next level of scary that I just cringe to even think about.
I have had experiences where I suspect that may have actually happened. Some interesting stories there.
Well, every time I talk about it at seminars, Jürgen, because I have audiences of sometimes 20 people, 100 people is most of the time, 100, 200, 300. Mm. When I get a special guest, like bringing in Matt Johnson, you know, we brought in with Matt and Greg, our mutual friends. I brought in the stars of the Million Dollar Listing TV show, you know, brought in Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sir Richard Branson, you know, brought in some real players. Then we get thousands of people, which is wonderful. But whenever I'm talking about that subject, without fail, someone will put up their hand and tell me their story about that happening. And I'll grill them. I'll say, is there any chance you went to the leak? Is there any chance that it was a while ago or whatever? And they've sworn black and blue that no, it's the phone was listening to them. And I don't know. You can only hear the story so many times before you start to think that it maybe isn't the future. Maybe it is the now.
Yeah. Well, I suspect, the technology is probably available, and I would be very surprised if they weren't testing it in some form or other.
Yeah. Well, I mean, didn't Bezos just get the most wealthy man in the world, the head of Amazon, I believe? I think he just pipped he's now number one. He's it?
Yeah.
Amazon.
It's all pretty dynamic at the moment, isn't it? Amazon. True,
yeah.
Well, everybody's buying online now, right?
Yeah. So probably shares have gone up.
Yeah. Actually, that does raise a point, because one of the things you talk about quite a bit is, how do you conduct marketing and how do you grow your business in challenging markets? And certainly for the real estate, that's a very topical from the point of view of, there are really up times and boom times in real estate, and then there are down times in real estate. So how do you as a real estate business stay growing and stay healthy as a business throughout those times? Now, of course, we're all faced with this coronavirus challenge, and the economies are kind of grinding to a standstill everywhere. So what are some of the principles that you've developed through the real estate industry and marketing that we can apply now in terms of continuing our business and even, changing the mindset from our doom and gloom, the world's coming to an end, to, okay, how do we kind of protect the business first and the people in it, of course, and health and all of that stuff, but how do we protect the business for the longer term so that we're still sustainable when we come through this? And how do we set ourselves up to take advantage of any opportunities that are out there without doing something like I've seen people now starting to go in and coronavirus, doom and gloom, but I can help you get through this. So they're kind of being a little bit snake oil type salesman, like what you were saying before.
I tell you, it's so close, isn't it? It's so close to right, though, in that. So my answer is, first off, not everyone's going to make it. Certainly, the more extreme the crisis, the more any business that is this close, say you're a week away from making payroll and you're 1 week of revenue away from closing the doors. Well, if the crisis is bad enough and something happens where that week of revenue is taken away, if you're that thin on your margins and your stores, your cash flow stores and your reserves and things, then you're in trouble. Now there are some businesses, because I'm very cognizant of economic impact, because I have so many of clients that are like that in normal times, let alone, because the real estate industry doesn't attract the most, let's just say, accountancy-based, numbers-focused, responsible, down-to-earth conservative business owners. It attracts lunatics who can't get a job anywhere else. But that serves when you do it well, when you get some of these marketing principles in place, that gregariousness, that outrageousness, that attention-getting demeanor serves them very well. So it's often good when they've got that sort of person, the accountant-type person, mopping up behind them, cleaning up the mess kind of thing, which I have. My partner, Naomi, don't know if you can, we're audio, but my partner, Naomi, who you may have seen online, and if any of you guys Google my name, you'll always see this stunning blonde next to me. My book is called Punching Above Your Weight for a Reason. And I know that, if people Google it, but that's it there. It's Punching Above Your Weight, because one of the reasons Punching Above Your Weight is she's stunning. And so, and I know the cover of my book there was me working out at Gold's Gym with Schwarzenegger. That's sort of the obvious thing. Bloke from Ipswich is, dreams come true, got Arnold Schwarzenegger, on his speed dial. And by the way, he's right now at home. He hasn't left his home in since they told him over there. And he's sending out videos every day because he's bored. He's just sitting there saying, stay home, you guys. Funny bugger. So there are some businesses that aren't going to make it. If the margins are too small, we're in trouble. So we need to be prudent and be investing so that we're not just always one step away. We don't need to be on the razor's edge. Oftentimes we do the same thing that we did when we had a job. If we earn $1,000 a week, well, we'll spend $1,000 a week. Well, in business, you can't do that, because when you earn $1,000 a week, well, you got to save your tax and put that aside. There's more issues at hand. So we've got to be smarter in the first place. But what does that mean though now? If we have or we haven't been smart, let's say we're stuck with it now, what do we do? And I like the principle. It's in one of the books that's behind me there called Jab, 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 Right Hook. I brought a fellow to this country. Some of your listeners would know the name Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yeah, Gary, yeah.
So for the first time in his Gary V persona, Gary had been to Australia to the Barossa Valley in his wine guy persona back years ago when he was the wine guy. But I was the first person to bring him to Australia when he was Gary V, you know, the marketing guy. And so his principle of jab, 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 right hook is so on the money that I can't sing its praises high enough. And it's so close to what you said about before, that these people are going out there with ill intent, trying to jab. They're trying to say, hey, it's coronavirus, it's really bad, but let me help you by here helping me. And that's the advice I would give. But the one tweak they have to make is they have to do their jabbing. Because the metaphor, of course, for your listeners, if this is their first exposure to it, please go and buy The Thank You Economy from Gary Vaynerchuk. It's a magnificent book. And Jab, 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 Right Hook. They're just fantastic books, the two of them. Of course, get his whole catalog. Crush it. Thank You Economy. Jab, Jab, Jab. Crushing It, the new one. Ask Gary V. Like, he's great. But the Jab, 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 Right Hook metaphor, it's a boxing metaphor, meaning the jabs are a metaphor for giving something. It's the Ferrari. That's a jab. Mm. It's the bottle of wine. That's a jab. It's this podcast that you're doing. You don't charge your consumers for it, and yet you offer them amazing value in this is the quality of training that I charge agents thousands of dollars for, these principles. So this is a jab. When people listen to your podcast, this is a give. And you have no thought in your mind when you give this quality information to your listeners. You don't call up each and every one of your listeners knowing what email address they're subscribed with and say, hey, did you listen to that podcast and what value did you get now? How can you pay me back? No, you give without thought of receipt, knowing that some way something good's going to happen. That's the way you need to do your jabs. You need to do your gives knowing that you might give, 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 and someone over here might take, 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 take. And the right hook might be from somewhere completely unrelated. It just needs to be giving without the pressure on you and without you putting the pressure on the world out there to reciprocate and give back. If people in these troubling economic times can come with an air of service in whatever it is that they do, and I know that you might have to do a bit of digging in your industry to find out, well, do I really serve them? I hand them a can of Coke and they hand me $1.50. And well, maybe that is serving, you know, it's cafe, whatever the case may be. But if you were the best darn cashier serving cans of Coke that you could possibly be, with the biggest, stupidest, cheesiest grin on your face that was genuine care, that person was parched, and you handed them an ice cold, dripping with condensation thing that was saving their thirst glands, you'd do it different than the dudes in Clerks in that movie where they're going, kind of thing. We know it's a hard day. We know that's the 300th can of Coke you've given out that day, but you don't know that 301st person wasn't Donald Trump's PA, or, you know, bad example, I suppose, Trump, but, you know, Bezos's, you know, Elon Musk's PA, who was going to talk about your attitude back to Elon and says, you should have seen this guy. All he was doing was give me a bloody can of Coke. And it was like he was my Tiffany's host, serving up Tiffany's stuff on a silver platter. I've never seen an attitude like this fellow. And I tell you, you just never know who's watching. I tell you, it was that attitude that it took me from a business relationship with Arnold Schwarzenegger, because I hired him, right? I hired him to come and speak at one of my seminars. That's me give him some money and him come and speak, right? That's that. But because I was cool, because I was just such a fanboy and I was so respectful and I'd read his autobiography like three times, listened to the audio book twice, I knew him like I know my family and I'd never met him. Knew all his movies off by heart, quoted them off by heart. But I wasn't a total douchebag fanboy, but he knew the depth of my admiration for him, the respect I had for him, and I just hired him with a substantial amount of money, and we got on like a house on fire. So towards the end of the thing, we're just sitting around chatting. He said, what are you doing next month, April 24? I said, whatever you say I'm doing. He said, oh, come over to my house. I've got a few friends of mine coming over. We're playing poker. And he said, it's not professional poker players. And I quote, and I can't do an Arnold impersonation because professionals or anything, it's just regular people like us. And I'm like, my God, sir, you have got a very different definition of regular people like us than I do.
Yeah.
But that happened because I do my best to be this, whether I'm with a client who can't even afford to pay me, or whether I'm with an esteemed colleague like yourself, mate, or whether I'm with someone who I have up on a pedestal like Sir Richard Branson. I mean, for half a day, I had a billionaire on my payroll, like a billionaire. And so, but I treat everyone like I treat Sir Richard Branson. Like I'm there to just do whatever I can to make that person's world just that little bit better, if it's possible.
Hmm. Yeah, there's so much great advice in what you've mentioned there. And, you know, I mean, I love Gary Vaynerchuk's whole philosophy and the jab, right hook analogy. So, you know, giving without any expectation in return, and not giving because you're expecting something, but giving because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
It comes back to what you were saying about service. So, and I think, you know, some of the communications I've seen at the moment around this coronavirus and here's what you can do right now, that just doesn't feel like service to me. So I've kind of held back on, I've got some ideas of things that I can do to help people, but I've kind of held back a little bit because I'm unsure of how to do that. But I think, you know, having that attitude of, okay, here's something I'm going to do for you to help. If you want to join and come on board with that, I'm not charging for it. I just want to help out and get people's business through this situation and do what I can to help, and then just forget about it. And at some point, you know, just like your real estate example with the bottle of wine, at some point somebody will say, well, actually we need somebody like you because we're doing something like this, and they'll probably think of me. And the other thing that is really important, you know, that highlights for me in the stories there, and particularly when you talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sir Richard Branson, is that, you know, whether it's somebody that you really admire and that, you know, I guess for me, I'd say, well, they're way up here somewhere, pointing up to the sky, and I'm down here on the floor. You're still, you know, they're still humans, and you're still building a personal relationship, and you're showing them that you care about them. So, yeah, that's really great advice.
Yeah, 100%. Well, mate, that jab, 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 right hook principle, I'm so all in on that. And I always was, but where it really cemented to me is once on one of my first ever training programs that I ever did. In fact, it was my first. It was called Massive Success in Real Estate. I made a throwaway line, just a joke. I was talking about customer service, in fact. I was talking about a company called Lexus, the car company, right down there at Indooroopilly. And I was talking about how it's a magnificent experience when I went into their showroom. And I'm not even a car guy, and I said this on the training. I'm not even a car guy. I like motorbikes, but I'm a fan of Lexus. And here I'm banging on about that. So I said, but yeah, if you can convert a non-car guy, I don't care about car, rubbish Hyundai that I drive, right? Car schmar. I like Harley Davidson. So then I jokingly said, so if you guys love this training program, and if it, hey, heaven forbid, puts $1 million in your pocket one day, it's a Harley Davidson, not a car that I want as a present or something. I just jokingly said, buy me a Harley or something. But I was joking, right? 5 years later, surprise birthday present that they'd conspired for 6 months. There's a Harley Davidson out there in my garage, delivered to me by my clients as a gift. They all got together and conspired, about 20 of them, chipped in a couple of grand each to get me this bike worth $20,000 or $30,000 just cause. Now, that's above and beyond the, I added up how much they must have paid me in cash over the course of their you know, customership or whatever. It's probably maybe $500,000 they'd paid me in fees. So believe me, it was not because they felt that they owed me because I'd done something for them for free. And it wasn't charity. They knew I could have afforded to buy my own. It was the principle of psychological indebtedness that we've been talking about, that they felt that the value I delivered them was far in excess of what I'd asked of them in return. So in order in their own minds to weigh up the scales and just do the right thing in their minds, they got me a Harley Davidson.
Hmm.
Crazy, mate. It's a beautiful world we live in. If you truly do, and you can't sneakily have that attitude of, I want to I want to get business. I'm going to pretend that I don't care, but you've got to genuinely remove the expectation of return, and then magic's going to happen. Harleys and stuff, you know? So
Yeah. And if you really care about your clients, because that to me, I mean, it's not about the physical gift. It's not about the money that cost. It's about the intent behind that. They, you know, they care about you because they say this guy loves his Harley, so let's get him a Harley.
Absolutely. And it, you're so right. And because I could have put, by that stage of my career, it was 2015, I could have put one on my credit card. Like literally, I could have paid cash for one easily. It wasn't about that. And as I was driving, I was riding the next day. They'd done it the night before, and I was riding over the Story Bridge down to get a helmet for Naomi. And I was bawling going across the Story Bridge because it hit home what they did. I'm like, bloody hell. They had a secret group on Facebook that they had to kick Naomi out of. So they'd put her in, they'd talk, sneak, sneak, conspire. My parents were in there and everything. But then they'd kick Naomi out just in case I ever saw her phone and saw the group accidentally or something. It was an incredible gesture that meant far more, the gesture, than the badass motorcycle that's out there in the other room.
Yeah, well, that's a wonderful story. And I think it's a good point now where we move on to the buzz, the innovation round. You've shared some really fabulous stories with us today, but that's a really touching personal one. So,
and I hope there's some good principles that your listeners have pulled out of those things, like, add value without expectation, watch your mathematics, get your mathematics right based on your psychology. You know, the psychology of the business that you might be in helping businesses optimize their profitability and things. You know, the psychology of saying, hey, it's, you want some help with your product? No, that's not going to be good psychology. You've got to get them in another way. Follow up with different media, email, SMS, voice, knocking on the door saying, g'day, you know, a gift, following up in different ways. So all of those principles, you got to pull out the principles of how I've executed these in real estate, see what the principle was, and then how can you execute it in your world, in American Express or in the Coke salesman or whatever the case may be. So, because the principles are solid across all humans, now we've got to find out how to apply them in our individual businesses, yours, mine, theirs, etc.
Yeah, that's a really important point. You know, the principles apply across the board. So find out how you can apply in your particular area. All right, well, let's move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's a series of five questions that are designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience.
Now I'm nervous, brother.
Yeah, hopefully you'll give us some really snappy, insightful answers that'll inspire people to go and do something awesome today.
I'll promise this, I won't be as good as Matt Johnson.
So what's the number one thing you think people need to do to be more innovative?
Fire, aim, who cares if we were ready? So what that means is take massive action when you have an idea, aim and see how it's working. So test first, see where it's working or not, and correct if possible, and don't spend too much time or any time really over preparing. So to be more innovative, act quickly, correct along the way, throw it out if it's not working, improve it if it can be made to improve, and always be executing, because you won't you won't cerebralize the innovation. It'll be just through, there's one of the best songwriters in the world, and I'm probably not being too lightning in the buzz round, my apologies, but there's a guy called Desmond Child, wrote most of the hit songs that we know, wrote Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi, wrote I Was Made for Loving You by Kiss, wrote songs for Cher, wrote songs for Ricky Martin, one of the most prolific songwriters on the planet. But he's probably got maybe 30 hits, and he's written 10,000 songs to get 30 hits. He didn't sit there and worry about the specific structure of Living on a Prayer. He wrote 10,000 of them before he came up with the 30 that have changed the world.
Yeah, that's really good advice. I like the saying that done is better than perfect. And then
Love it. Somewhere in my world here, I didn't know, I probably stole it from you, Jürgen. I always say, don't let perfect get in the way of done. And so we may have both heard it, or, you know, parallel thinking.
That's not from me. I can't remember who said it.
Yeah, we got to find who that is, because I've been stealing it from someone. I don't know who.
Okay. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Copy off other people in other industries so the new ideas seem new to me and my audience, but aren't new at all. I've never had an original idea in my life, but I've taken principles and innovations and examples from elsewhere, changed it enough, of course, that I'm not plagiarizing or whatever, but hey, if it's not, you can't copyright the principle of delivering a gift like a remote control device without the remote control. You can't copyright a principle. So the way that I've innovated is I've never innovated. I've just copied when I've noticed something that's worked, noticed it, tweaked it if I had to, tested it, threw it out if it didn't work in my industry, and kept it, and almost got thought leader of the year for the whole bloody country just by never having an original idea in my life.
Yeah, well, I think that's a really fantastic way of prompting ideas. And then, like you say, I can't remember, it might have been Isaac Newton that said this, you know, that he stands on giants before him. So that's the same sort of principle that, you know, we come into this world and there's a knowledge base here, and we can tap into that knowledge base in various ways, and we can add to it. And we add to it by basically taking what's already there and adapting it, changing it, applying it to a different situation. So really that's what you're talking about. But at some point, some people forget about that.
100%.
All right. Do you have a favorite resource that you use most often?
Now, Facebook Ads Manager.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, the Robert Collier Letter Book. Magnificent copywriting resource, the Robert Collier Letter Book. If you guys haven't heard that, get it. You know what? I mean, there's the thing. I want to give you a good answer, but there is no good answer. Those two answers are good because they're the first things that sprung to mind. What I'm using right now most often, Facebook Ads Manager, a lot.
Yeah.
Because it's the greatest marketing innovation tool ever. You can take, if you think ad A is going to work and you want to test it against ad B, cost you pennies in the dollar to figure out which one is best practice words. But the real answer for me was, it's all of them. You know, the Robert Collier Letter Book is amazing for copywriting resources, but there's 1,000 hours of copywriting training in this stupid head. So who can say it's that copywriter versus that copywriter? Is it Dan Kennedy? Is it John Carlton? Is it Peter Godfrey? Is it Brett Thompson? Is it Steve Plummer? Or is it collectively all of their principles, and now I've got this unique thing that's the Glenn method? But I'm just a combination of Dan Kennedy, John Carlton, Pete Godfrey, Brett Thompson, and Steve Plummer, you know? So. Mm. Everything. 10,000 hours, mate. In that bookshelf that you can see behind me that your listeners can't see.
It's ceiling to wall, left to right.
10,000 hours. And what you can't see is down below is all the audio courses, all the audio books on Audible. 10,000 plus hours of me listening to experts like you and others like them all around the world so that something's going to rub off. Mm. That's how I got there. That's my resources. Yeah. It's everything. Immersion.
Yeah. Fantastic. All right. Now, what's the best way to keep a client on track?
Wow. Yeah, that's tough. That's the toughest question for a coach ever. Because you know what? I haven't figured it out. Hmm. I err, and this is possibly me doing them a disservice. But what I ended up doing is I almost turned my coaching and mentoring business into a I'll do it for you business and just hand you the clients. So about half of my business is me doing it for clients, meaning they just give me their area geographically. I learn a little bit about them, what they're trying to do, and then I go out to Facebook and I market for them and I just hand them leads. I teach them what to do with those leads and we're done, kind of thing. The other half of my business are the ones who do change the world. And so I've got some agent clients of mine that are now multi seven-figure earners and literally are like the mayor of their local area, earning millions of dollars for themselves and their families. Because I didn't do it for them. I showed them the principles of what to do and they went and figured it out and perfected it along the way. I don't know that, well, I'll answer it this way. I haven't figured out how to keep a client on track who doesn't want to be kept on track.
Yeah.
And they sort of self-select in my world. My marketing probably repels a certain sort of client that wasn't going to work with my style and a little bit outrageous, a little bit out of the box, a little bit gregarious and things. But yeah, no, that is a question that if you find the answer, you're hired, and I'm gonna get you to do that part of my business for me, because that's a tough one.
Yeah,
people are weird, well, man.
It sounds like one of the things you can do, and somebody did say this quite a while ago now, in answer to that question on the podcast, was select your clients carefully.
And okay, so well, I said that in some sort of
a little
way,
bit. Yeah.
But I'm kind of like yourself, mate. I want to save them all.
Yeah,
and it's tough. Like I'll nearly die. I'll die trying, I think, you know. But yeah, so it is do that. Here's another thing. So this is one thing I definitely do. When I say to them annually and semi-annually, what are we aiming for? Because when I'm working out our mathematics of what they want, I need to be based on something. If they're coming to me saying, oh yeah, a bit more would be good. Well, I ain't going to play.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to say, right, what are you earning now? If the goals we're chasing are monetary, what do you want to be earning? And we get a plan, a razor-sharp plan. Then once we've got a razor-sharp plan, I ask them what the difference will be. Like I remember I was in a coaching session. There was a guy that I was asking. I was going around one at a time, really figuring out, why are you going for that? And he gave an amount. And I said, now, is that gross? Because there's a certain amount in some industries, certainly in mine, where there's a certain amount of commission that comes into the office as a gross, but in many cases, only half of that goes to the salesperson. And when he said his figure, I said, is that the gross or is that to you? You know, when you say that figure of 170,000. And he said, oh, and I thought, well, there's our problem. You just said a number and you don't care if it's 170,000 or 85 or 34. Like you don't know which one you're actually aiming for. Because if he didn't know, no, it's 170 in my pocket before tax or after. You know what I mean? We need to be specific. And we need to, because what I asked him is, okay, so if you only earned $85,000 in your pocket, what would that mean to yourself, your family, your situation? Like, are we good? Is it going to be good? He says, oh, yeah, no, it'd be okay. Now, I guarantee that man is only going to earn $85,000. He's only going to earn $85,000 because to his life, it makes no difference whether he earns $170,000 or $85,000. No difference in his own mind. So what we want to do is get crystal clear that extra 85,000, let's take off a bit of tax, he's going to get 50,000 schmackers in his hand extra. What would he do for his wife? You know, what would he do for his kids? Would he take his kids to Egypt rather than have them study Egypt? You know, would he take his kids to see Queen at O2 Stadium rather than listen to the Queen CD that his son is somehow found in his CD rack or something? And I'm talking about my son right now. You know, those sorts of things, you know? So it's about knowing what you want and then going after it. Like, you know, the reason, you know, I'm hoping I'm animated and I'm enthusiastic, I'm doing my job well, but I'm on a mission right now. I've been on a mission for 10 years, but for the last 48 hours, this morning I was up at 5 a.m. Yesterday I was up at 5 a.m. I got to sleep at 2 a.m. and I was up at 5 a.m. again. And that wasn't because I was out partying. I was working my butt off for like, what was that work out at? 21 hours in a day. Now, I don't do that every day, but I do whatever has to happen. That doesn't happen because my goals are, a bit more would be good. You know what I mean? So keep someone on track by giving them a fire. And you can't give them the fire, but identifying a fire in them.
Oh, yeah. Find the why and get really clear. Find the why and get really clear about the goal and really, follow that passion.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Now, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Read a book that's just up there called Purple Cow, right? Yeah. Purple Cow by Seth Godin.
Yeah.
Just a genius. Read everything by Seth, but Purple Cow is the one. So it's stand out by any means necessary, except for where it'll make you less positioned to your ideal client, meaning you can't be a goofball just to get attention if it's going to hurt your sale process. But, you know, so the way I've done it, one of the best ways I've done it is I've employed the principle of celebrity into my world, meaning I've done everything I can to make myself a celebrity to my marketplace. I've employed real celebrities. meaning the people we've talked about, the Gary V's, Mark Burris, George St. Pierre, all of my heroes, brought them into our world. I was just texting this morning with Shannon Knoll because, again, I love his music. I've hired Shannon a couple of times to come and play at our events just as the musical entertainment. Why? Do they expect a musical gig at the end of the training seminar? No, I just do it because I like him and it makes me that little bit more celebritized. The people go, oh, you know Shannon Knoll. I had one of my clients say, can we hire Shannon for our Christmas party? Absolutely. So I look good in Shannon's eyes because I brought him a gig, look good in the client's eyes because I bring them an Australian legend. Wonderful thing. So employing the principles of celebrity. The reason that I wrote a book, Punching Above Your Weight, available now on Amazon. Just kidding. But the reason I wrote a book wasn't because I wanted to write a book, believe me. It was because famous people write books. So I wrote that book just so I could get published. Now, Simon & Schuster didn't come knocking at my door, so I self-published. I figured out how to become a book publisher. Now I've published over 150 books for my students. They're all up on Amazon because no publisher wants a book from a real estate agent on how to sell a home for top dollar. No publisher wants that book. So I had to become that publisher to publish myself and publish them. They've all got their ISBNs. They're all got books out there, and they can all hand a book to a consumer and say, instead of a business card, because you think about if you've got a business card, where does that end up? You know,
ends up in the rubbish bin. Yeah, that's right.
You know, with all whereas if I handed lights. You, and Jürgen, I'll certainly make sure I get a couple of copies in the mail. I'll make sure I sign one to you as just as thanks for you having me. And it is a good book, right? I you know, it's a bit raw, not the best speller, but you know, I enjoyed writing it, and I've gotten great feedback. But I'll send you a copy. Where's that going to go if that was my business card? If I was handing that to you, because again, it's got all my details on the back, you know, it's got all my communication details. What's the difference of that and a business card? Well, the difference is you'll keep this and you'll throw this away. You know, you'll throw the business card away and you'll keep the book. So it's being published. It's being interviewed on podcasts like yours. So if you're out there and wanting to position yourself in your industry, maybe beg Jürgen to be on his podcast because, you know, what you're doing is all of these little things to try and get tools in your toolkit that say to your consumer, you're different than a salesperson in your industry. I'm a salesperson the same as the next bloke. I sell the services of helping a real estate agent do better in their world. But I don't do it by constantly just being out there saying, cold calling them saying, hey, you've never heard of me, but I'm a good coach. Do you want some help?
Yeah.
They'd be beep, 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 beep. They'd be hanging up on me, hell, Western crooked. But so I don't call. I wait for them to come to me. But the way I got their attention in the first place, differentiated myself, is they saw me on Channel 10 with Arnold Schwarzenegger three times over the last 4 or 5 years. They saw me with Richard Branson, and Richard Branson got their attention. I was just that bald idiot standing next to him. And then all of a sudden they go, who is that idiot? You know, and after 6 years after my original kind of, okay, I'm going to have a good crack at this. Because I was a coach for 2 or 3 years doing it that way. Just sort of saying, hey, I got a seminar. Do you want to come? It's good. It was in 2013, so 7 years this year. I took the leap, hired my first international kind of celebrity kind of person, and I haven't looked back, you know. But that's just one way you can get attention, but it's certainly the way that I've chosen is instilling the power of celebrity, both turning myself into a big fish, small pond, published, interviewed, having a podcast myself, being all over social media, having good branded shots that aren't just a typical salesperson with the arms chopped off and sitting there looking like that, you know. My photos are as dynamic as I want my brand to be perceived on social media and on my marketing pieces and things like that. So I do everything I can to celebritize myself and associate with real celebrities, and that combination is a great way to get attention. It's an expensive way short term, so you got to warm up to it, but baby steps, you just keep going. And I've reinvested every penny I've earned in the next level. You know, so I do a seminar that earns me $3,000. I invest $3,000 or as much of it as I can into the next marketing piece and then the next marketing piece. And I just keep pushing all the chips in every time. Push those chips in.
Yeah.
Still pushing them in after 10 years plus.
So, there's lots of great advice there. And a lot of it is around, you know, really being your personal brand right across the board and owning that. And then getting out in front of people and serving them, you know, back to the jab, 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 right hook. Mm.
Yeah, but those resources, to answer that question, Micro Famous by Matt Johnson and Seth Godin's Purple Cow, Gary Vaynerchuk's Thank You Economy. You take those three gentlemen and apply their principles, it's like I'm all three of their illegitimate love child.
All right. Well, thanks, Glenn. This has been really fabulous. Now, where can people find out a little bit more about you and maybe even reach out and say thank you for what you've shared with us today?
I wouldn't be much of a marketer if they couldn't just put my name in Google and find me. But Facebook, it's me. Actually, Facebook is the only place it's me. If they email me, they're going to get a team member. If they go anywhere else, it's going to be a team member. But if they go to Facebook, it's me on the end of that messenger. So if they want to message me there, and but I tell you, if they grab Amazon, you know, the book's there on Amazon. I tell you what, if they did grab a book on Amazon and then message me on Facebook and tell me so, then I'll make sure that they'll get a couple hundred bucks worth of goodies, not just a $30 book. Like, I'll give them a copy of the Arnold Schwarzenegger event. So 3 days of awesomeness where we're headlined by bloody, you know, the Terminator himself. But we had Jeff Bridges at that event, Michelle Bridges, Jeff Fenwick. We had the Olympic gold medalists, Nat Cook and Kerri-Ann Potthast. You know, we had a who's who of success at that event. It was wonderful and an honor for me. And if any of you guys grab the book and tell me, I'll send them a copy of all 3 days of us sharing what we've shared for an hour here with you. You know, imagine 3 days with us maniacs, you know. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful and very generous. So, yeah, we'll post the link to your Facebook page there as well as the other places, of course, on the show notes. So just click through there and let Glenn know when you've purchased the book.
No worries. And you know what? We've got to be in the spirit of jab, jab, jabbing, right hook. Look, just message me and send me your address. I'll send you a copy. All right. So there you go to the listeners.
Oh, there you go.
And you owe Jürgen one. You don't owe me one. You owe Jürgen one, right? And so I'll send you a freebie. It's all good.
Thanks.
Build the love.
Now, last question. Who would you like me to chat with on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why? This is my networking question.
I love it. So do you want someone realistic or do you want a big grand dream goal?
I will go for both.
Okay. So your grand dream goal, I mean, if you've never had Gary Vee, get him if you can.
Yeah.
It's hard to get.
Yeah.
If you can get Gary, he's phenomenal. He's not a very good guest in that he'll overtalk. He's worse than me. He's a chatterbox. And if you ever look at my interview with Gary online, you'll see, boy, oh boy, with the pair of us in a room, it's crazy, but it's fun. I went to New York City in the offices of VaynerMedia. It was wonderful. So Gary is one. Who's a good – now, do we want an Aussie? Matt Steinwade. Now, he may be a real estate agent, but he doesn't like talking about real estate. He's the opposite of me. He's one of my best friends in the world, and he's – when you talk to him, you'll say, are you really friends with Glenn? No, can't be. He would drive you insane, Matt, because he's quietly spoken – does, multiple seven-figure income, massively successful, one of the icons of our industry, one of the nicest humans I've ever met. And what I've been a tank to force my way to make the marketplace respond to me, he's been a Porsche. He's smooth, lovable, lets it come to him, never forces anything, never closes anyone hard. If they don't want to do business with him and they don't genuinely already decided to hire him, he doesn't force it. He just says, that's okay. And he'll go, let him go with someone else. He'll in fact encourage them to go with his competitors. He's the exact opposite. He has attracted to him the success that I have kicked down doors to get a fraction of for myself.
Yeah.
Matt Steinwald.
All right.
There you go.
Okay. Well, we'll see if we can get Gary and we'll reach out to Matt and get an introduction to Matt from you and have a chat with him. So thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us and your passion, sharing that passion, the energy hopefully comes through when we publish the recording. I've really enjoyed this, had a lot of fun, and I wish you all the best for the future and let's stay in touch.
A pleasure, my man. Thank you, bud.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that dynamic and inspiring conversation with Glenn and took something away from what he shared with us today. His passion is certainly infectious, and I really like his strategic approach to building a target audience in Facebook for advertising. Of course, a lot of the ideas that he shared with us, which in his examples were very specific to the real estate industry, can be applied to other business segments. So I'd love to know what you took away from Glenn's episode. leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Glenn Twiddle. That is GlennTwiddle. All lowercase, all one word, two N's, two D's, innovabiz.co/Glenn Twiddle. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Glenn there, as well as links to his website, his Facebook page, where you can leave him a message, and also his book, Punching Above Your Weight, as well as the other resources that we spoke about on today's conversation. Glenn suggested that we have a conversation with Matt Steinwade on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So Matt, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Glenn Twiddle. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got some more fantastic guests lined up, including Sarah McIntyre of Bright Inbound and John Andrews of Photify. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like it. Even if you don't like it, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.